I'm Blake Collins.
And unlike Blake, I'm Nick Devadas.
And welcome to The Health Quest.
The Doolander's Health Quest. Yes, this is the series when we talk to experts in health and wellness about their top advice for people over 40.
Let's do it. Now, welcome to the Doolander's Health Quest. How are you?
Oh, good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You are beaming in all the way from sunny Brisbane this morning. You were just saying you've got up, you've looked at the sun, you've gone down for a swim. It's just amazing. Here in Melbourne, it's 16 degrees. So you've had a great start to the day.
Yeah. It's my new pattern. Go down for a swim in the morning if I can, and then shower coffee. That's my new thing, a coffee in the shower. I saw the ice bath trend.
Yeah,
and I decided to step it up a notch and have a nice warm shower with a cup of coffee.
I think that is such a better trend than the ice bath. Like, why would you want to get into an ice bath when you can take a coffee to the shower?
Yeah, exactly. I think the theory around the ice bath is anything that really stresses us out and makes us feel really uncomfortable, if we can do that and be calm, we kind of build up a bit of resilience.
Yep.
But I also think that we could just have a nice shower. Plenty of stressful things we can try to be zen through. I don't need to sit in a bucket of ice for that as well.
I reckon that's a beautiful approach. Let's roll with that one. So much easier for us to achieve too.
There's a Seinfeld episode where Kramer decides to live in his shower and then cooks all his meals in the shower. Is that where this is heading?
No, but it could. I didn't know about that. I have added the shower beer and a chair at the end of the day. Another big day. It's another Queensland thing. We start the day at the beach,
yeah,
then we have a little shower coffee, then we do some work, and at the end of the day, take a chair and a beer and sit down in the shower and chill. I reckon that's going to be a new protocol I'll create.
That is an amazing protocol. Actually, Matt, before we go on, it'd be amazing if you could just tell us, who are you and what actually do you do other than shower coffees and beers on stools in the shower at the end of the day? What do you do?
Yeah, you wouldn't think, but after that, I'm actually a naturopath. Isn't that a weird thing for a naturopath to do the start and finish of the day? I was a naturopath for 25 years or something, so I think I'm still a naturopath. But I typically spend a lot more time designing products and creating new concepts or understanding how the old concepts work and trying to build products around that. So as you can imagine, I've had a massive obsession around like gut health and how to create supplements that work. And I worked out a lot of that happens via the gut, which was tribute back to that naturopath thing. So I think that's what I am. Don't know. Told I was unemployable, so I had to go become an entrepreneur.
So for the uninitiated, what does a naturopath actually do?
Oh, well, that's the thing. So a naturopath is a bit of a mixed bag of things. So when I did my study in the 90s, it was a really, really high-end study. It was a really good, high-quality science degree with lots of great information. They have culled a lot of the courses down and it keeps changing. So I don't actually know what a naturopath is. But typically, we do a lot of study around herbal medicine. We do a lot of study around mineral therapy, how to use the supplementation, and also a lot of food therapy as well. So we learn a lot of modern science, but also a lot of traditional stuff. The problem was learning this around, you know, 80s, 90s, and even up until now, science hasn't yet caught up to understand how to explain how these things we've been doing for thousands of years actually work. Science is only just catching up. So it's an interesting one where we talk a lot about trial and error over thousands of years. We talk a lot about modern science and the medical pharmaceutical models. But at the end of the day, we're kind of a little bit torn with what we know works for thousands of years and what can be explained through science. So it's a fascinating, I find it fascinating, a subject, naturopathy.
Yeah, it is super fascinating. Hey, before today, I was just doing some research into who you are and what you do, and I was just reading, like, so at 40, you've got this supplement company, you've been super successful, you've got a podcast where you discuss things like health, happiness, fat loss, gut function, you're inventing a whole bunch of new tools and concepts, and you're helping other people change their lives, but you weren't living it. And in your words, you said you were overweight, miserable, suffering with crazy amounts of pain, gut dysfunction, you know, had a whole lot of stress. And then everything broke What happened?
Oh, man. Oh, that's a really good question. So I started off, man, I was always a sick kid, you know, real bad asthma and eczema and everything as a kid. Funny thing is that my grandfather taught me how to make this cream out of calendula, rotten old calendula flowers. So we grew these marigold flowers and made a cream, and it fixed my eczema and it got me all fired up, you know, to do this bush medicine, you know, because he was an old bushy.
Yeah.
You know, and I used to want to be the bush tucker man and all that sort of stuff. And growing up in the Whitsundays, it was all camping and hunting and fishing. And it was a lot of that was involving like beer and running amok and with the boys, you know. But here I was as this naturopath as well. Then it was kind of weird because that's how I started into it. And then I started working as a naturopath. And I was always a bit rebellious, surprisingly. Just wanted to rebel about everything that I was told to do. And what was a bad thing is becoming a naturopath. I did that for my job. And so for my job all day, I'd talk about how to be healthy and happy, how to do this and what you should be eating, what you should be avoiding, and all that sort of stuff. And then at the end of the day, I was like, bugger that, work's finished. I'm going to the pub. You know, so me and the boys would go to the pub, have our crumb steak and our beers. And there was this weird, it was almost like a schizophrenic thing. It was almost like I was being a naturopath here and then I'd be a rebellious opposite to a naturopath outside of work. It's like the mechanic's car analogy sort of thing. Like, and I spend all day working on someone's car, I'm buggered if I'm going to come home and tinker with mine, you know. So I think there was a lot of that. But the funny thing is I just got so caught up in that not living the naturopath lifestyle, like thinking that I need to work hard, need to sacrifice, I need to be in the office, I need to be plugging away. It was a real contradiction for me because the whole naturopathic teachings about balance and lifestyle and happiness and, you know, and all that sort of stuff, I didn't believe it, you know. That's probably the best way to explain it. I felt that to be successful in business, I still had to do that hustle and the grind, and I still had to team up with business people that would be focused a lot on money. You know, I had to take investment. I had to grow it to be bigger. You know, I got so caught up in this business world that and then still with my bad habits of like, screw that thing, I'm finished work now, I'm going to have a beer, you know.
Yeah.
So what happened with me is I got so caught up in that business world, putting in so many hours, I ended up getting up to, 138 kilos. I had this massive gut problems, massive overgrowth of gut bugs. And it was crazy because I was spending all this time researching gut and focusing on gut. Like, I've been heavily involved in a lot of products that focused around gut health. And there was always, there's a really good reason why there was a lot of my products and education around there was on fat loss, you know. I got so bloody fat.
How tall are you, Matt?
Oh, I'm 6 foot.
Right.
So I sit right on about 6 foot, 138 kilos. I think I got to lose about a third of my body weight to be healthy, according to the BMI, or get significantly taller. Yeah, that was one of my strategies, you know, like just take the piss out of everything. I could find excuses for my lack of results in all aspects of my life. I could actually justify it through my brain, ability to have science and justify my excuses into a biochemical trap. You know, I had all of those things, but the reality of it is I wasn't living the lifestyle that I should be living, and I was basically sacrificing that for others, apparently. But then, then everything went so pear-shaped because I was focusing on this for others. Like, I believed I was working really hard for my staff, my business partners, for my family. I was doing all this stuff to make everyone proud. I was doing all this stuff to make sure that we made money to set everyone up. And then I started becoming a real, not a nice person. I had all this resentment around all those people. I'm working hard for you. I'm doing all this stuff, you know. So everyone around me, like that, I thought I was not being myself because myself was not suitable for business. I had to be a business person. So while I was doing that, creating that version of me, I realized that everyone around me is creating versions of me as well. And so the version of me that everyone was creating was this like business focused, arrogant asshole, or, you know, like this, sorry to swear.
But no.
So that version of me that everyone was creating was like not me, not the version of me that I thought I was, that guy from North Queensland that just wanted to be the bush tucker man and like go to the beach and stuff like that. So all of a sudden I'm wearing like business clothes, I'm traveling, staying in these places, going to meetings all the time. Someone else's dream. A lot of people thought that was the ultimate dream because in the sporting community I was going to some of the greatest places and greatest events and doing the best things. But I mean, I was so fat and so sick and in so much pain that, you know, and then I was so resentful for working so many hours while everyone else was having it easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and then,
yeah. Was there a moment in time? Was it an epiphany or was it a gradual like, shit, you've looked in the mirror and gone, who is this guy? How did it happen?
Yeah, there was all that. There was all that. I was definitely beating myself up. But what it come down to is there were the people that were closest to me, like family, friends, and even people in my work at the time that were, I looked at as family and stuff like that. They actually started like really hating me. And I was like, oh, well, hang on, man. Like the version of the people that I was trying to do the most for, that I was probably the most stressed around, they had the worst version of me that that I could ever possibly imagine. And obviously not the version I wanted to create in those. Yeah, I didn't care too much about the version that other people in the public had or, you know, people on social media, I didn't care. But when the people closest to me and staff that I was trying to inspire and things like that, they started complaining, you know, you're cranky or you're stressed or you're not living at all, you know, those sort of things. That was probably one of the big tipping point for me. And then, that led to like a massive breakdown. Like I have to be honest, the wheels fell off. Everything broke. And I realized that all these years of like trying to do things for other people or achieve certain goals, I had totally neglected myself and my own goals and also realized that in doing so, I can't inspire anyone and I can't impress anyone. And to be honest, who would listen to this fat naturopath talking about obesity on a podcast? You know what I mean? So all that, so you start to get that imposter syndrome and can imagine all that sort of stuff creeping in. Here I am also coming from a position of ego, I suppose. I was stuck in this fear. Never, I didn't think I was motivated by fear and greed, but obviously would have been, you know, and that sort of stuff. So I actually become a lot of the things that I didn't like as well. And then when everyone else was pointing it out and I'm like, that's not who I wanted to be. And like, that's not my plan. But then the reality is who are you, man? Are you the one that does the things or the one that wishes you were doing something different? You know?
Yeah. Well, and so when you think about how you found your way out of, you know, you're, sounds like you're, you know, right in the deep, dark recesses of the bush there, right? So how'd you find your way out? Like, was it about applying all of the things that you'd learned?
Yeah, it's real good. Yeah, actually, it's exactly what it was. And reaching out to a few of those people as well that I'd interviewed and worked with and said, hey, look, I need some help for myself now. But, yeah, it started off with those moments, you know, like that Will Ferrell, milk was a bad choice, you know, or doing the whole sad breakdown, poor me, you know, that sort of stuff. And then all of a sudden it was a couple of weird things. I did some podcasting with Ken Ware and Don Wood, a couple of real inspirational people to me. Ken Ware gets people out of wheelchairs with this weird ass rehab. Don Wood is a psychologist that deals with trauma people. Both of them, what they do is they totally screw with people's memories and the emotions attached to the memories. And it's almost like wiping the emotion attached to the memory. But what they both do is they trick you to getting out of your head. Get out of your head. Like I used to try meditation. I'd meditate like crazy. I'd imagine the shit out of that beach or something. You know, like everything I did was intensity. Yeah. I'd like go to the gym. Like, you're an idiot, you fat bastard. You haven't been here for ages talking on a podcast. Go psycho. I'd go, right, I'm going to go keto. Like, go no carb, heaps of fat. Just live off the barbecue. You know, like I'd do everything like with intensity, but I'd do it with aggression and do it with angst. And then it just doesn't work. And then what was happening is it was all done in my head. Body had no idea what was going on. What Ken Ware does is he does this stupid stuff where he gets you doing things that stress you out, like cold water bath stuff, but like in the gym. get you on stuff like he makes you do no weights, like really low weights, and these 10-second reps where he makes you analyze every millimeter. It's got to be perfectly symmetrical. And every time you, oh, that reminds me of a traumatic event, you're going, yeah, whatever, don't make it famous. Get back to your hands, think about your hands, and you're like, oh, shit. So, and it, but he, it's all on purpose to screw with you, to wipe the emotion, touch the memory. It's like, I couldn't be going through that work stress rise now if my traps are relaxed, I'm not frowning, and I'm doing this for 10 seconds. Mm. Like, obviously, I'm not fighting the stress. Don Wood, you try to talk to him about his stress, and he goes, oh, hey, I'm really interested in your story, but while you're telling me, he says, I'm getting confused with some of the details. I want you to change all of your words to the word flow, but keep telling me your story. So you're like, flow, 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 flow. And then he's going, oh, my screen's dirty. So while you're telling me flow, can you clean my screen? Here's my hand. Grab my hand, wipe it across the screen. Oh, you've missed a bit down here. Do this a bit. So you're like, flow, 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 flow. And he's going, so what happened again with your stress? And you're like, oh, flow, flow. No, so no, just talk normally. I'm like, oh, okay, this happens. And then you've got no emotion attached to it. Yeah. And so I started doing work with those dudes. I then went and did a full gut analysis, like went and did a lot of the testing. I went and ran myself through the naturopath stuff that I'd run through my athletes or other people, went and did Microba Insights gut testing. I went and measured all these organic acids, worked out what my body was doing for me specifically, discovered that, yes, I had amazing gut flora, all the right kinds, like all the other tests said, yeah, your guts are so healthy. I just had way too many, so many of these gut bugs and the wrong types. So I went and did a massive killing spree and changed over how my gut works, totally changed it, and in doing so, changed all of my appetite, my cravings, took away all my inflammation. I lost 35 kilos in about 3 months, 35 Whoa. Kilos of weight. So I went from my 100 and I think I was down to about 128 after I finished crying about milk and stuff.
And then shed what, 5 kilos yeah. through tears?
Yeah, just from tears and beer. And like sleeping in the car and walking on the beach because I've lost my car again. And then that sort of stuff. Yeah, I went through a weird phase, you know, where I just had to do stuff, you know, run away and hide for a bit. Yeah, and then after I did all that, I dropped down to about 128 or something, lost 35 kilos. So I got down to the same weight I was when I was about 15. And I hadn't been to that weight since I was about 15. And it was then everyone started worrying about me for different reasons. Like, oh, you're killing yourself. You're going too extreme or something. No, I'm really zen right now. I feel pretty good, actually. Yeah. And
look
then,
how clean my screen is. Yeah.
Yeah. I clean my screen daily with Dr. Don.
Yeah.
And Ken, I can sit there and do this like a wizard now. Yeah. I don't know, 20 seconds if I had to. Yeah. But yeah, so that changed everything for me, and it's changed everything for me. Your perspective and everything's changed. Yeah.
So talk us through the massacre that occurred inside your guts. Like, what did you have to send in to start that war?
Oh, I tell you what, I had to bring a dog to work for a week or something. After it, though, to blame the dog for the smells that were coming out. My God, when you do those clean outs. No, so quite, I tell you, it's another funny story, actually, because where I come from, we used to have this stupid, bloody sensitive weed. It used to plague of my childhood. Every time I went to walk across the grass, there were these same bloody prickles everywhere, all over the footy fields and everything they were up north. Turns out that was one of the weeds I actually used to kill off the parasites in my gut. Mimosa pudica, discovered, was one of the herbs that killed off one of the little resistant bugs that was living inside me. That was quite funny because that was another one of that childhood sort of experiences that if I was switched on and in the zone, I would have gone, one day I'm going to use this. But no, I did a lot of products. I used to make a company called ATP Science where we made a lot of products for gut health and that sort of stuff. I still use all of their products, still love it. And then I had to go and get a few more specific things. But a lot of it was like hibiscus, cranberry. I used to make a lot of herbal teas. I become obsessed with herbal teas and that sort of stuff through the process because what happens is what I realized was a lot of my cravings, a lot of my brain chemistry was being totally hijacked by these gut bugs. When I had such an overgrowth of gut bugs, they were in so much control. Like, you have to understand that they will make you crave the foods they love. So they would crave things like lactose. Yeah, you got to understand the power of these bugs. Like, for perspective, I mean, rabies is a bug that gets spread through saliva, and the only way is saliva to blood. And to do that, the best way to do it is biting. And they make animals crazy where they can want to bite. You get like toxoplasmosis infects rats, makes them look for cats because it spreads through cat poo and that sort of stuff. Like these things make us do mental stuff. Mm. They totally hijack our brain chemistry. 85% of the signals or the brain chemistry is made in the gut and got to go there. And it's our gut bugs that decide, does your tryptophan want to go down a pathway to make serotonin, which will make you happy?
Yeah.
Or do we want to take it down a quinolinic acid pathway that'll actually be a nerve irritant and keep us stressed and awake? Or do we want to convert it to vitamin B3, which we then want to use as an energy source because we're not eating enough fresh fruit and vegetables with B3? You know, so we got to understand our gut bugs are extremely powerful at changing our brain chemistry and deciding if we're in hunt and gather mode because they're hungry or craving specific foods like lactose or sugars and things like that that they love. Or in my case, where I'd overgrown certain bugs that love to feed on animal fats and make you crave salty animal fats and everything off the barbecue. So what happens when you start starving these bugs, when you start changing the diet and realizing what they feed on, you know, your calories are fine. I know I've eaten enough, but I'm getting these like uncontrollable cravings. These bugs are making me like mentally wanting to feed on sugar after I just finished a meal. Like, why on earth would I need to eat a big thing of sugar? I just ate like 10 times that amount of calories. The bugs wanted it, you know, and they make me crave it.
Yeah.
So what I worked out is when the little buggers are making me crave something, I poison them. So when they're saying, go and feed me that bit of sugar or go feed me that thing, I go, oh, yeah, this might look like a little bit of sugar. Like a lot of the herbs are polysaccharides or something that are sugar, they resemble sugars, but they're full of poison. And so what happens is I just go, when they're getting hungry and they're making me want to crave those foods, I'd make up herbal teas with Schisandra, yerba mates, cranberry, hibiscus, which is that rosella. And I'd do a lot of those sort of things and constantly do that. I also realized that the whole foods, nature's smarter than all of us.
Yeah.
So what happens is we have these bugs that are craving the carbs or the food, the oil, the protein, the sugar, the macronutrients that are found inside the plant. So what plants do is they surround themselves with a polyphenol shell, like skins and peels and all those sort of things have got polyphenols in them to stop the bugs from overfeeding on the sugar so it doesn't rot or, you know. So when we eat those foods and when we eat a lot of processed foods, they take away all the polyphenol poisons because they're bitter and astringent and have flavor and stuff and that in our mouth. Plus, they're very volatile. They're not very stable. You know, 80% of them go within 2 weeks of picking an apple. Mm. You've lost 80% of your polyphenols, you know. So what we're supposed to be doing is whenever we eat the food, the macronutrients, we're supposed to be eating them in their whole natural state where they're also full of poison to stop the bugs from overgrowing.
Got it.
So what I used to do then is then whenever I do eat, I went back to eating a lot of nuts with their skins on, you know, just instead of eating, snacking on peanuts, just covered in salt and that sort of stuff, I'd go back to getting the ones in their shell, you know, you crack them open and get all the skins. The skins actually are very powerful. You know, same with pistachios and that, the skins in there. So I just started snacking. I need to snacking on the almonds with their skins. It's like starting to get those sort of things, getting back to their whole forms. So, dropping off though.
Are you, about to ask about pistachio nuts? Because their skins are pretty hard.
I am. Like, hey, I've got a question for you, Matt. Like, this is fascinating. If you know, Nick and I started this health quest to, you know, we're in pursuit of living forever. But when you think about it, like in terms of, if you dumb this down and talk to the average 40 or 50 year old, and you focus on creating gut health, what should our priorities be to make sure that the microbiome within our guts is right? And I don't know enough about this, so help educate us here. But what are the basics that we should do for gut health, do you think?
Oh, whole foods.
Yep.
Like avoid the processed stuff. So whole foods. Now, being aware of how much our whole foods has changed, it's really important to actually try really hard to get whole foods that have skins and seeds and some of the pulp and everything.
Yep.
Freshness is so important. Polyphenols add color, smell, and fragrance. They're the most important things about our fresh fruit and vegetables. They disappear very quickly. Okay. So fresh, which means local and in season.
Got it.
So, and now when we eat fresh, local, and in season, we have no choice but to cycle our diet and get a varied diet. We need to stop focusing on having a balanced diet, and we need to get a varied diet.
Right.
We need to change our diet all the time. There's no point finding the same couple of fruits, the same couple of vegetables, and eating them every day. That's not natural. Like if you look at apples alone, they're in Australia, apple season's February. Most apples, they're picked in bloody February. So if you're now in December eating apples, they're probably picked last February, if you're lucky, maybe the February before. Now, if we consider that 80% of the goodness is gone within a few weeks, like we're missing out on so much good stuff. So we got to eat fresh, eat local, eat in season. What that does is it means you cycle your diet. We want a diverse and varied microbiome. We don't just want a big microbiome. More people have an overgrowth, dysbiosis, SIBO, candidiasis, all these words that people use, irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease. Most of these are associated with or triggered by an overgrowth of bugs. Very few of them are a deficiency of bugs. And the problem is that we have is we build the same bugs over and over again by eating the same foods over and over again. And that's how we can be doing the healthy things and thinking that we're doing the right stuff, where we're having sponsored by Uncle Toby's and the dairy industry, because that's the food pyramid, and we're convinced that we do the twos and the fives or whatever. We've got to get now. But all that is not right.
Okay? So it's not like, just about calories in, calories out, or counting your macros.
No, can you imagine this then? Okay, it is. Yes, it is. 100% it's calories in and calories out. However, what the hell is that? Because, okay, if I have an overgrowth of firmicutes, which is a particular type of bugs that can potentially make up half of our gut contents, they can increase calorie yield by carbohydrate foods by 20%.
Right.
So if you've got an overgrowth of firmicutes, they increase your calorie yield by 20%. I mean, that's cool. But we don't know that when we're measuring your calories in and calories out, which is why everyone just starts the same way. We'll have a crack based on your muscle mass, basal metabolic rate, whatever you tell us your activity levels is, and then we'll manipulate it from there depending on if it's working or not. So because then they don't know. What if this is the other thing, man? I go and cook my the calories thing that messes with me. Like you imagine rice, okay? So I give you a cup of rice before it's cooked or whatever. I don't know what it turns into at the end. I'm a shit cook. But the rice start. Okay, so you've got a certain amount of calories in your rice, all right?
Yep.
Now, if I just cook that rice through the absorption method with water and I eat that, you get a certain amount of calories from it, okay? Now, if I add a teaspoon of oil, okay? So if I add a teaspoon of oil to that cup of rice, I've added more calories, haven't I? The oil's an extra teaspoon worth of calories. But if I cook that using the absorption method where the oil soaks into the rice, and if I let that sit in the fridge overnight and eat it the next day, instead of eating the fresh steamed rice or fresh cooked rice, I actually eat it the next day with oil in it, I get half the amount of calories out of that cooked rice made with oil than I would have out of the fresh rice without oil.
So how's your calories work out?
What happens is the starch comes out, the amylopectin releases the starch. It mixes with the oil, makes a totally different compound like a wax, which is called a resistant starch, which you don't absorb. And it actually feeds the microbiome. So 50% of the starch contained within the rice gets converted to resistant starch. Or I got one banana, simple thing of a banana. You get a banana, you eat it green, it's all full of resistant starch. By the time it's bright yellow and spotty, that resistant starch has turned to starch. Your calorie yield from that one banana, even though it weighs the same, changes significantly depending on how ripe it is.
Wow. So many questions. But you've just said whole, fresh, local, and varied, right? Whole, fresh, local, and varied. What else are the, you know, those priorities for us? Because like I was reading your website and I love this, right? So we're the sum of our consistent actions as we age. We create vicious biochemical cycles involving multiple systems dragged out of balance. Now, and you say it's essential to identify and break these cycles to get results.
Yep.
So is breaking those cycles whole, fresh, local, and in season and varied?
Yeah.
And are there other things?
Oh, no, simply, if you actually were to just eat with the seasons and eat local and change. So what I'm meaning is like, for example, running through phases of intermittent fasting, running through phases of lower carb but cleaner, higher fiber, you end up cycling through all of the diets that we see work. Actually fit in with a natural cycle of the seasons. If you are, once you get into actually hunting and gathering and realize there are times where there are certain foods are available and others aren't, you end up running through a cycle of keto or potentially carnivore. You'll definitely have some failed hunting trips where you'll go plant-based for a while. We have an intermittent fasting. They're the sort of things we're supposed to do. And that creates a very big, diverse microbiome. Challenging ourselves and stressing ourselves with those sort of survival things create a microbiome that's capable of significantly adding to our genes. It's good, like, for perspective, the human genome, they discovered is about 22 to 23,000 genes in our human genome, which was cool. They discovered that in the Human Microgenome Project. But then they worked out that rice was 45,000 genes, up to 65,000 genes. So the rice plant has double the genetic potential as a human being. And then they could never work out the genome. That they coined that the genome complexity conundrum. So hang on, we're this super organism, but we've got half the genome as a rice plant, you know, but we can do these things and that, you know. And so what they worked out is our microbiome has 3.3 million genes that it adds to ours. So 3.3 million genes comes to our body to aid us to give the stuff that we don't need, that we can't do, that they can help us do. For example, for us to adapt to build vitamin B12 and that sort of stuff out of eating plants and that sort of stuff the way microbes do, that would take us about 100 to 150,000 years, okay, of starvation. Our microbes can adapt within a few days, which is why our microbes have the ability to build vitamin B12 if deficient, vitamin K when it's deficient. They make branched-chain amino acids if we're not eating enough. They make glutathione. They make the tryptophans. They make the brain chemistry. They can also decide if they want us hunting and gathering and stressing or if we're cool to relax and chill. You know, there are so many. They determine our calorie yield. They determine the size and the shape of the host. They can even recycle hormones, create hormones if we don't have enough. They are the missing link, but it's us just trying to understand how the hell they work. At the same time as we're learning all this, we're living in a society full of pesticides, fertilizers, eating food covered in glyphosates and that. They kill it. Our food chain is full of antibiotics and stuff like that. So I tell you something interesting. It was 460 BC or something, I'd say 2,500 years ago, when Hippocrates said there's something in these fermented foods that help our guts and that sort of stuff. Last year, 2021 in August, they had the International Society for Fermented Foods, Probiotics, Prebiotics and Postbiotics make a statement that there is something in these fermented foods that must be good for our gut that confers some benefits to us. So 2,500 years later, they're coming around going, oh, maybe we should look
at this.
We're
onto something here,
Well, I for one, I'm glad that there's not going to be an uprising of rice plants. That's a reassuring. With all of their genome. So, my question, Matt, is around frozen foods. Because what I'd heard, or maybe it's just old wives' tale, is snap frozen vegetables, those sorts of things. And, you know, we talked about apples being picked in February. You might be eating them in December. What is lost during that process of freezing?
A couple of different things. So it does preserve the vitamins, though. So freezing is really good for preserving vitamins. Vitamin B12, folate, and that sort of stuff stays a little bit longer that way. But you do lose a lot of the polyphenols. So let's have a look at broccoli is a really good one. They've done a lot of studies on broccoli. So you know how frozen broccoli smells a bit like fart and looks a bit like fart. Little fart clouds out of the comics. I always see that. I cannot see it.
Love it.
But yeah, so the thing is with broccoli is with the polyphenols, they live in the plant cell wall. So what we actually find happening is we have enzymes that live in the cell structure wall, and then we have these compounds living inside. So what happens is we're designed to chew and break these things up. And as we chew them, it kind of starts the process of digestion. Now, freezing does a similar thing because, as you know, when you freeze water, it swells. And as you freeze things, they swell and it breaks the cell structures. So freezing starts almost like a digestive process, and a lot of the polyphenols get broken down and released. in the polyphenols found in broccoli have a sulfur compound, which is why you get a slight sulfur, more sulfurous odors out of the frozen broccolis and more sulfur flavor out of frozen broccoli than fresh. So bad for the polyphenols. You don't keep as many of those. They do degrade significantly, even though freezing does slow down the degradation. One of the best ways to preserve polyphenols, though, is through fermentation, like preserving things by fermenting. So we're finding a lot of polyphenols found in sauerkrauts and kimchis and a lot of these fermented products. And the fermenting will preserve it much better than freezing. So this is the old school. Even jams have, you know, jams and that sort of stuff have more than a lot of the frozen fruits. So, you know, like, yeah, so pickles and preserves and all that sort of stuff are very good for that. Vinegar, even.
Right. So we're about to hit the silly season here, the Christmas season. For those of listening out of order, not easy to get through some of these periods of time where you might have work lunches, Christmas parties, and then obviously Christmas Day. What's your advice to our listeners out there to get through these sorts of periods, or any sort of period, I suppose, where you're going out and you don't have that choice of eating local, or eating fresh? We don't even know where the ingredients are from.
yeah. Well, I do love this time of year in Australia because all the best stuff's coming into season. So all your berries and cherries and lychees and all that sort of stuff, we smash all of those. Snack on a lot of stuff, like all the nuts and seeds that we've got coming out now, but make sure you get them with the skin on, you know. So giving everyone the nutcrackers for Christmas is a good idea again, and those big bag of the old dodgy nuts where we still got all the other polyphenols found within the nut skin. That's beneath the shell, you know. So don't, I'm not telling everyone to go and eat the shell, like under, you know, get the shell off and then there's skin that wraps the nuts. My key is polyphenols is the trick. Lots of herbal teas and lots of stuff. Trying to spike up your diet with it and eat more. So what you got to realize, when we're eating sugars and overeating sugars, when we're having a lot of alcohol and that, our gut microbes will want to overgrow.
Yeah,
because it's in a, you know, they go through feast and famine. You know, this is a stage of feast. Not only will they overgrow, but any little spores that have been loitering around waiting for fruit season to come back, they're going to hatch as well. So that's why typically as soon as we start indulging, we get a lot of bloating, we get a lot of distension, we get an overgrowth of these gut bugs. They start fermenting everything inside us. So the key is, and it's a perfect time of year for it. We actually, it is the perfect time. And if you go back and have a look at a lot of traditional recipes, you'll start to go, oh, man, they might have been onto something. Because you've got to realize things like nutmeg, cloves, anise, allspice, all of these herbs and spices that we might brew into an eggnog, or we might have a heated rum or a mead or something like that, all of those traditional old school brewed stuff are full of polyphenols. Right. Whiskey fermented in oak barrels is full of polyphenols. The polyphenols that come out of the oak barrels, they believe, is what gives you the longevity aspects around good quality whiskies and wines and that sort of stuff. Urolithins, these resveratrols. So eating high quality things when you're binging, like go for really good quality whiskies, really good quality red wines. You know you're going to get these antimicrobial polyphenols that's going to offset the extra sugars and calories you're eating. Infusing everything with herbs and spices, making sure everything tastes like the Christmas spirit with all those spices that they whack in at this time of year. You know what I mean? Like, and then filling up your foods with herbs and spices. Even so, why would you fill up an iceberg lettuce salad, you know, when you could have it loaded full of oregano, coriander, thyme, like parsley's, all of these high nutrient dense green leafy herbs and that sort of stuff. That's all what it's made of. And then when we're eating our fruit, we want to eat it fresh, and you want to eat it local and in season. So you want to just binge like crazy on all the fresh and local mulberries, cherries and everything when they're available in their whole form, not just juicing them.
So when we talk about herbs, are the dried herbs, do they suffer the same reduction in polyphenols?
Yeah, they do. They do. And you just eat a lot more typically. So when you get a fresh herb out of the ground, they are much better. They got all the smells and the fragrance and that sort of stuff. And that's the polyphenols. So you just got to use a lot more of those dried herbs. But in saying that, they are more concentrated because they're dry. Per gram, you know, you typically reduce it. You know, divided by 20 or something, and then anyway, so yeah, it kind of offsets itself to a certain degree, but yeah, fresh is always best, even with herbs.
Okay, and then my final question is around the teas, because that feels like it's the easiest access for a lot of people to start down this path. I could be wrong. You know, there's obviously your cult. Love your thoughts on that as well. And but with the teas, are there off the shelf teas that are good in this manner, or are you better off building your own teas?
Oh, it's funny. I just don't know. The problem is there was some studies the other year. They found, I think, oregano. They found on the shelves in Australia, it's like 94% wasn't even oregano.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they're just like mixed herbs and flavored up or spiked up. So I just don't know what's in there. But I'm a very skeptical person. I've spent a lot of time in manufacture of supplements and food manufacture, and a lot of time ripping stuff apart. You know, one of my mottos that every company I build, the underlying motto revolves around this: results, not excuses, because we want to get our products to work, and I don't want to be left with an excuses of, oh, but the ingredients were crap or something. So I used to test absolutely everything, and the stuff that I found, it was just, you can't unsee it, you know. So now I'm so skeptical of what's out there. So I buy a lot of whole herbs and spices. In fact, I'll go to, like, there's a place, herbwholesalers.com or something, just an Aussie supplier, just bulk raw herbs. And I'll buy the whole herbs in the whole form, and I'll get them out in the mortar and pestle. And once I know what they are, you know, I can see them. It's not just these weird powders hidden in tea bags and stuff like that. So I'm very skeptical, so I'll go through. But I like the whole herbs. I'm very skeptical even what happens after we powder them, if we can just keep them in their natural form as long as possible, and I grind them up just before I use them or something. And you'll get to see them. They're wicked. Like Schisandra berries are one of my most favorite herbs of all time. I think you buy like half a kilo of it for like $30 or something. It'll last you so long. But we use that as an alternative to like Szechuan pepper or something. It's got a really nice flavor. Every once in a while, we just stick these things through the pepper grinder. We just add it to our foods, and as well as making teas. We do so much of that sort of stuff. The cupboard is just full of raw herbs and spices that we go through. My boys' favorite thing to drink, they call it honey tea. But basically, we get aniseed, fennel seed, thyme, and cloves, and just make that into a big cup of tea for them. And then they just add a little bit of honey. I've got a friend of mine, Elizabeth Lambert, she's the best naturopath in the world. She has a native honeys and supplies me these wicked native honeys. And we just make this tea on this stuff. So all these natural things. And getting into, I'll tell you what, my fun thing now. It's almost like this modern day foraging, you know, like going around trying to find all these cool delis and these cool places that'll have all these rare raw herbs. When I say rare, they shouldn't be rare. They're everywhere, but you just can't find them, you know? But yeah, I love that. That's what I love. And I get a lot of people on social media that I interact with and talk with. It's almost like a discovery, this hunter-gatherer thing that we're doing now where hey, I found a cool place where you can collect this in the wild, but here's another place you can buy it, you know? And we're just sharing out all these cool things and supporting those sort of local farmers markets is the way to do it, I reckon.
Hey, look, Matt, we could talk to you for literally hours and hours and hours, and it is absolutely fascinating. Whilst you were just talking about that, I was thinking, what are we putting into our kids' stomachs here? Hey, last question for you. So how do we find out how healthy our guts actually are? And what's the test? How do you get one? And then, you know, what happens from there?
Yep. Best test that I've found is, and it's the best test that's been out ever, and it's, you don't need a naturopath or doctor or anything, just Microba, and you go Microba Insights. Right. That is seriously one of the best tests ever. And that one there, you just go straight to Microba, and they do a little poop smear off the toilet paper. Send it off. It's like a bit of a CSI genome sort of thing where it goes and measures all the genes that have come out of your poop from top to bottom. That's one of the best. But that only tells you about what's living inside you. It's how your genes interact with your body's genes that determine your genetic expression. So what I'll often do is I'll measure your guts. I don't care about measuring the human genome. It just seems pointless. There was not one innovation or anything exciting that ever come out of that ever. They'd wasted years and years. They just worked out how to screen our genes better. So I don't bother doing any human genome testing. I measure the microbiome, and then I do these organic acid testing now and urine testing typically. So I measure poop and I measure urine. And I rarely measure anything in between because I don't So I basically see what's coming in one end and what's coming out the other end, and it tells us so much. The organic acid test I do through a company called Research Nutrition. That one you do need a naturopath referral for, though. So, but you can go and get the microba test and then work with a naturopath to help you to do the organic acid testing and maybe another thing called a Dutch test. The Dutch test was brilliant because it measures all your hormones, metabolites and that, so it can give us a good indication of our reproductive hormones, you know, for anti-aging and all that sort of stuff, as well as our adrenal hormones, because they got to make up a lot of the difference once we the nuts and ovaries give up. It's the adrenals are going to take over. So, and then all the brain chemistry. So when I measure those three lots of testing, and as a snapshot for anyone to work out how you're going in space and time right now, those three, that's the best starting point I could ever imagine.
Love it. Hey, Matt, if our listeners want to get in contact with you and run those three tests and find out where to from here, how do they find you?
Yeah, so it's mattlegg.com, mattlegge.com, or links and stuff. Yeah, but mattlegg.com is my webpage. My new brand is Fiber Performance, P-H-Y-B-A for Fiber. But yeah, I got all sorts of weird projects and wonderful stuff happening. So just follow on the webpage, or I think I'm Leggy Leg on social media. I can't remember anymore. I had an identity issue.
We'll put all the links in the show notes. So everyone listening, you can check that out. Click on some links.
Yeah, love it. Hey, Matt, thank you so much for your time. So generous. Hey, I'm going to jump on and we should both do those tests. And
we normally experiment on ourselves with everything our guests tell us. So, yeah, we'll definitely do that.
Oh, do it, man. You're going to love it.
We will love it. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for your time. Great to chat.
My pleasure. Thanks for that.
Matt.
Yeah, bye.